Welcome to Flashback, a fan-created show of the TV series The Flash on the CW. I'm Stephen Schleicher. Over there is Matthew Peterson. Matthew, how are you this week?
Hello. Oh, I'm awesome.
So we are done. We've collected all of our show notes for the latest issue of The Flash, episode of The Flash.
Season 1, episode 10,
Revenge of the Rogues.
I love Booger in Revenge of the Rogues.
here's the cool thing. You know, there was a, not too long ago, there was a Flash run called Rogue's Revenge. This was happening during, what, I think Final Crisis.
Yeah,
when
Final
this was
Crisis,
going on.
Rogue's Revenge, sounds right.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. That series was written by Jeff Johns with art by Scott Collins. So
of
Revenge
course.
Of the Rogues, Rogue's Revenge. There you go for this week's episode, kind of a nod to the title. Now, next week, it's The Sound and the Fury, which is, from my knowledge, nothing related specifically to The Flash, but it is a William Faulkner title, so we've got that to look forward to.
I suspect we're going to get the Piper.
Oh, no, yeah, definitely next week. We already know that Pied Piper is coming back.
Okay.
In fact, this week there is a nice reference to Pied Piper in that, and we'll get to the two main characters, Captain Cold and Heatwave, in just a second, but this couple, this very rich couple called the Rathaways, are flying back from Paris, and they have just purchased a $25 million picture called Fire and Ice. Do we know somebody else named Fire and Ice?
Fire and Ice. That's a Pat Benatar single from 1985.
Also the favorite team pairing of the Justice League and Justice League International of Fire, Beatrix DaCosta.
The former Green Flame of Brazil.
Yep. And what is she, Norwegian?
I believe she's... Yeah, Norwegian may be right. Well, technically, Tora Olof's daughter, the
daughter
ice maiden that we know more of, is actually from a race of ice creatures who live in the mountains.
All right.
We'll call it Norway.
You know, Beatrice, she once was the head of Wayne Industries down in South America, long time ago.
Nice.
And
she was.
Go ahead.
She was also one of the people mentioned as having died in the particle accelerator blast by Professor Zoom.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago when they did a whole bunch of name dropping, she was one of the ones that was named. So it's interesting that we get Ice just as a reference. Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, and Kevin Maguire created Ice. She first appeared in Justice League International number 12 back in April of 1988. So back to the Rathaways.
Yes.
The Rathaways are getting off their plane, and they're having a little rich people conversation, and somebody mentions their son, and Mr. Hathaway says, "Oh, lovey, don't you know we don't have a son anymore?" And, of course, their son Hartley is who they were trying to receive a phone call from.
He's
the Pied Piper, that's right.
Pied Piper.
So it'll be interesting to see what how this character will play out.
I do like in the teaser for the series next week, he makes a remark about how cute Barry looks in his tight leather coat.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I'll be interesting. We can talk more about Pied Piper the next time.
Yes.
This week's villain duo, Captain Cold and Heatwave. Now, we've talked.
They look really familiar.
Captain, these two. I forget who plays Captain Cold. William.
Wentworth Miller.
Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell. Both of them played on a TV series called Prison Break, and now they're back together as two criminals.
Prison escapees.
Yes. And in fact, that actually happens later in the show. We've already talked about Captain Cold before, but just for your refresher, Captain Cold first appeared in Showcase No. 8, June 1957, created by John Broom and Carmine Infantino, same way with Heatwave.
Is that the second or third appearance of The Flash, Showcase No. 8?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at all my cross-referencing to see.
Number 4 was the first one. I can't remember if he appeared between 4 and 8. But
are you talking about Captain Cold?
Yeah, Captain Cold. If he's in Showcase No. 8, that's either the second or third appearance of Barry Allen ever in 1957.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was Captain Cold's first appearance was Showcase 8. And he was the Flash's second supervillain.
So, it would probably be his second appearance. Cool.
Yep. So he's got his cold gun. When we saw him last in, I think, episode four. One of those.
Yeah.
At the end of that episode, we knew he escaped, but he went to meet a friend called Mick Rory and says, "Hey, I've got a job for us to do, and it's going to be something that you like." And, of course, he gave Mick Heat Gun, and he is Heat Wave.
Heat Wave.
What do we know about Heat Wave? Also Heat created Wave. By John Broome and Carmine Infantino.
Yes, Heat Wave was a young pyromaniac, a fire nut. I want to say that he ended up being a fire eater in a circus after he burned his house down as a child.
Yeah, burned his family's house down. Yep. He burned the house down of a boy that bullied him in school, and then he also burned down the traveling circus that he worked for as a fire eater.
Now, a lot of the crazy that Mick Rory has went away for a while in the 1990s during the run where Wally West was the Flash. But I believe Geoff Johns re-crazified him and made him even more dangerous and off his nut when Geoff Johns returned to the series in the 2000s. But yeah, the thing that's interesting about it is when Heatwave shows up in the comics, they actually refer to him as being basically nothing but an ersatz Captain Cold. And now, 30, 40 years later, nobody thinks of them as separate. They're always together, it seems.
Yeah, it does seem like they're always together, but it always seems like they're always at odds with one another. Sometimes they're enemies, sometimes they're friends, but they're always doing something interesting. And they're certainly trying that this week in a plot to kill the Flash. Heatwave first appeared in Flash number 140 in November of 1963.
It's a good issue.
So that was, you know, that's quite a bit of time between the introduction of characters.
Well, yeah. Flash took over the Flash series with Flash number 105.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 30, 40. That's basically 40 or 45 issues of Flash comics over the course of 5.5 years. But yeah, it's interesting that they were ready to go back to the guy with the heat gun thing that soon in the run, you know, six years in. You think of the Silver Age as being this giant well of ideas, and they're like, what are we going to do this week? We got a guy with an ice gun. We got a guy with a heat gun. This guy has a gun that makes bad smells.
And here's a guy that shoots mirrors out of his butt.
No, he has a gun that shoots mirrors.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You got to have a gun.
We haven't done Mirror Master yet. I'm sure we will at some point.
Oh, we will. We'll get to it.
Next week is Pied Piper. Then there's some skip week where I don't know what's happening that week. I don't, and that's not episode number 15. Episode 15 will feature time travel. After Pied Piper, a blank episode, then we get a Gorilla Grodd episode. So we've got all of those to look forward to. So,
plus, Mark Hamill has been cast as a trickster.
Yes, as the original trickster, helping to find out who this imposter trickster is. So that should be interesting. Hey, what's the deal? What do you think? I mean, I'm sure there's a realistic reason for it. Mm-hmm. But why is Detective Joe West wearing a beanie throughout this entire episode? Was he acting, I mean, in between breaks between first half and back half of the season? Did he go and do another job where it was required that he shave his head or something?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean,
my guess is because
it's cold. But I mean, he's wearing it all the freaking time.
Maybe he did shave his head. I don't know. Jesse Martin is one of those actors who makes kind of interesting choices sometimes. You know, when you see him trying to play a really villainous guy, he'll always have that just one moment where he does his beautiful Jesse Martin warm laugh and you're like, I can't hate this guy anymore.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if you've seen Rent. He's one of the characters in Rent. And throughout Rent, he's just this really kind of chill guy until all of a sudden something happens and he'll just flip out and he'll go completely nuts and do a scene. And then at the end of it, he'll be like, hey, I'm Don Collins.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I love that actor. I wonder if he did shave his head.
That's my only guess is that he shaved his head and they were trying to cover it up with a beanie or he did something to his hair. I mean, they could have put a hairpiece on and covered it up that way. It may have looked a little odd, but I just, from the moment he wore it, I was like, why is he wearing a beanie inside as a detective?
It's cold.
I guess. That's the only thing I could think of was, oh, yeah, I get the metaphor. We open this episode. I know we're jumping around a lot, but just the opening of the episodes. Dr. Wells does a little something crazy.
He almost gets up.
You would think that somebody from the future would know that Barry doesn't die on a testing grounds.
I think that being from the future and being in the past means that he has the ability to change the past And we've seen him actively trying to make things happen to make his world better.
Right.
Or to make his world the way he thinks it should
be. Well, there is that one part.
He can clearly affect the future.
Well, yeah, there is that one episode a few episodes ago where Barry disappeared from the time stream when he lost his flash powers. And he went into his little laboratory, and the newspapers had nothing about the Flash, and his computer, or I think Oracle, knew nothing about the Flash and couldn't find any reference to it. So, yeah, maybe he doesn't know what could trigger the change in the future. And he so doesn't. I think that's kind of interesting.
I also think it's interesting that Star Labs apparently has the ability to fly fully armed missile drones within the city limits.
That's not the city limits. That's some abandoned airstrip place.
You can see the city right behind them.
Well, that's far enough away.
That's 12 feet away.
No, it's a ways away.
I live further from the city than that little testing area.
Yeah, and look, you're right next to an Air Force base where I'm sure they fire ordnance all the time.
You fire ordnance.
So here's a couple of things about the Reverse Flash, or the Man in the Yellow Suit. We actually get the Man in the Yellow Suit gets a name this week, Reverse Flash. Yes. And Cisco does point out, oh, yeah, Reverse Flash, that makes sense. Barry, you've got a yellow lightning bolt and a red background. This guy has a red lightning bolt, yellow background. And Dr. Wells says, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I kind of like that name. First time we see a kind of a Reverse Flash kind of coloring was way back in February of 1949.
Yep. Last issue of Flash Comics in 1940.
Flash Comics number 104, the first appearance of The Rival. And this, I mean, come on, it's the 1940s. They hadn't come up with things like Backwards Flash or Reverse Flash yet.
I like
he simply
the name
is known as
Rival.
The Rival.
I like The Rival better than Reverse Flash.
Yeah,
not better
I mean,
than Professor Zoom.
No.
But better than Reverse
Flash. So The Rival is Dr. Edward Claris. Who believes that...
Clarice.
Who,
tell me yes. about the screaming of the Flashes, Clarice.
He thinks he should have the same powers as Jay Garrick. And so he creates a formula called Velocity 9, which, if I'm not mistaken, Velocity 9 has come up several times throughout DC history.
Yeah.
I want to say it's one of the triggering factors of, not Excess, but no. One of the other Flashes, somebody who has a speed power... uses Velocity yes. 9 in some way, shape, or form.
You're thinking first of the speed demon,
maybe
Tina McGee's husband, Jerry, and then the red and blue Trinities. But the thing is, I think the Velocity 9 is retcon reverse engineering.
Oh, what do you
mean? I think Velocity 9 was first appeared in the 90s and was retroactively applied to the appearance of the Rival from 1949.
Mm-hmm.
His formula didn't have, to my knowledge, a name.
Oh, okay.
I think Jeff Johns brought those two stories together and said that Velocity 9 from the Wally West stories in 1990 or 1987 was retroactively derived from Claris's formula.
Oh, yeah. Who was the – we see Velocity 9 being used in – well, this is the history of Velocity 9. It's mm-hmm. drug developed by Vandal Savage, which,
right.
of course, this is current DC continuity, not
that's
not Golden Age, yeah, post crisis. But it was used by oh man, the not the Impulse guy. What is his name? God, he was like the Reverse Impulse.
Oh, Schmucky.
Yes. Inertia. That's who.
Thank
it is.
You, that guy.
Yeah, Inertia is the one who. Ends up using the Velocity 9. So
Chucky O'Toole.
It is a formula that's been around for a while, but the Rival, instead of wearing a costume that looked exactly like Jay Garrick's, and Jay Garrick's going to come up a couple more times in this podcast, I'm sure, he had a darker version of the Flash costume. So just turn down the brightness a little bit on your TV
yeah.
set, and that's how the Rival came about. Now, the second Reverse Flash, Professor Zoom, a.k.a. Eobard Thawne.
Eobard Thawne.
He first appeared in September of 1963 in Flash 139.
Yep.
And because, and this is the thing that I think is really great about this, because the creators knew that Thawne would be a dead giveaway for a bunch of people, they gave us this red herring of Eddie Thawne, who is the detective, who is dating Iris.
Right.
And many people were like, oh, well, he's going to be the Reverse Flash. He may be a Reverse Flash at some point. He may be a reverse Flash at some point. Did you see when he came running down the stairs the first time at the detective, at the police, you know, the detective place where all those police people hang out?
The detective box house.
Yes. He comes running down the stairs and he's wearing running shoes.
Only a super speedster would wear those.
Professor Zoom was updated later in The Return of Barry Allen, 74 to 79 in The Flash, and made him mentally unstable.
Which was actually fascinating because it explained that the reason that Zoom attacked Barry Allen was because he remembered having been attacked by Wally West in a costume just like Barry Allen's in the future of the DC Universe, which was his past.
Yeah.
It was a nice use of paradox.
Yes. So that's the second reverse Flash. Now the third reverse Flash, Zolomon, Hunter Zolomon, first appeared in The Flash Secret Files and Origins number 3. What makes Zolomon so interesting, or just to Zoom, what makes him so interesting is he tortures Barry because he thinks that by torturing him and making him suffer and do all these things, it's making him a better hero. And Matthew, what was the whole point of the conversations this week on The Flash?
Dr. Wells wants to make Barry into the best Barry he can be. Yeah, it's definitely a parallel. And the fact that Zoom, who was just called Zoom.
Right.
And not Professor Zoom.
Right.
You know, has a lot in common. Zoom was, in fact, I want to say, paralyzed at some point during his career before he became a super speedster guy.
Interesting.
Or maybe that was his cover. I don't remember.
We do know the CW presentation of the Television Critics Association event. They did come out and say, yes, Wells is the man in the yellow suit. He is the reverse Flash.
You think Harrison Wells is actually Hunter Zolomon?
I think that's what the end of the man in the yellow suit kind of led us all to believe. In some way, shape, or form. Now, what's interesting is, if I remember, Professor Zoom, Thawne, didn't his suit somehow channel into the Speed Force? Zolomon, he actually is able to control the Speed Force.
Right. Professor Zoom had basically the equivalent powers of Barry Allen. He had an old Flash uniform.
Right.
And he had used the Flash uniform in the 60s, to duplicate speed, which was read in the modern times as actually tapping into the Speed Force.
Right.
So, yeah, but Zolomon,
remember,
I want to say.
Well, I was going to say in the episode Man in the Yellow Suit, where it looks like Professor Wells is attaching something or powering up the yellow suit, could be a reference to Professor Zoom.
Could be.
It's all crazy, man. I can't wait to see what they're doing with this. I'm hoping that there are actual multiple reverse Flashes running around the timeline. One who's Hunter Zolomon, another who is a descendant of Thawne, and he's, upset and coming back to try and kill Barry because he destroyed his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather's only one and true love. Speaking of Iris, go ahead.
15 reverse Flashes is what we need.
Oh, yeah.
We need one in each color of the rainbow.
Speaking of Iris West, she's moving out and moving in with Eddie this week.
Oh.
Much to the chagrin of her father, Joe, with his beanie. Even inside, drinking a beer, he's wearing a beanie.
Beanie Joe. That's his dude.
They're packing up. He comes downstairs and hands her a little stuffed animal. McSnurtle the turtle from when she was a little boy. Or from when she was a little girl. Yeah, he goes, he's coming down the steps. It's really hard to catch because he's come down the steps. He goes, oh, it's Mr. McSnurtle the Turtle. And then they have this conversation about how she broke his, not Count Basie record, but one of his jazz records when she was little and he took it away. And he's like, well, now here you can give it back. McSnurtle the Turtle, animal version of the Flash.
The terrific
What's It, yeah.
Yeah, I love those books. The Terrific What's It used to appear in little half-page strips throughout DC Comics in the Golden Age. I want to say up through about 1949 or so.
Really?
But yeah. And when we were kids in the 80s, they were reprinting in Adventure Comics issues of Funny Stuff. And if you I actually had a couple of issues of Funny Stuff where McSnurtle the Turtle showed up. Although also interesting, McSnurtle's grandson became Fastback of the Zoo Crew.
Oh, okay. That's crazy.
Yeah. Which I think is kind of cool, but that was, you know, just Roy Thomas being
I think
genius.
The last time Fastback appeared in DC Comics was during 52, where the name of the bus line that one of the characters was going into, I forget which city, was Fastback Bus Lines.
That's funny.
Yeah, so yeah, the terrific What's It, Merton McSnurtle, McSnurtle the Turtle, appeared in
McSnurtle.
Funny Stuff number one, summer 1944. And when he turned into his superhero disguise, it was essentially Jay Garrick's costume that he would run around in.
Jay Garrick's flesh. And he talked like that turtle from the cartoon.
So McSnurtle is kind of a reference to Jay Garrick. Mm-hmm. We know that the Reverse Flash has its origins in the realm of Jay Garrick. We know that over there in Keystone City, there is a place called Historic Garrick Wharf. Ooh. I am still hoping and praying that we get a Flash of Two Worlds episode.
Well, I hope and pray that he will. You really think they'll do that?
Man, if they're going to do with time travel and have fun with time travel, then they can have fun with multiple worlds, and it would give them a reason to have two Reverse Flashes.
Ooh, good point. But then you have to explain to, you know, we had a discussion in an episode of Zach on Film that hasn't aired yet about what's too complicated.
Oh, I don't think this would be. I don't think this would be too complicated at all. You've got a whole scene where Cisco and Caitlin and Wells and Barry and Joe and all the other 20 people that know the Flash's real identity all sit around and have a conversation about this.
Oh yeah, one time there was another Flash, Barry.
So while everybody's saying their goodbyes and Iris is packing up, she's like, "Oh, Barry, I found something up in my closet. Your little red and yellow backpack that you had when you were a kid." And it still has your nerd survival kit in there.
Aww.
And he opens it up, and sure enough, there are comic books inside his nerd survival kit. The comic that he pulls up, you have to freeze it really quick. It's Cartoon Network starring Space Ghost Coast to Coast number 4, published in 1999.
Yep. It's a $3 book.
Yep. Now it is today. Back then it was like $1.99, I think is what it was.
Comics.
I looked this up. There were two stories in that issue written by Andy Merrill with art by Clay Martin Croker and Mike DiCarlo. The first one was 45 minutes till showtime, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, is that how much time they gave Barry to go meet them down on the street corner to fight was 45 minutes? And then I watched and they said sundown. I was like, ah, that would have been so great if somebody had mentioned 45 minutes to showtime, because it seems like when they drop references into this show,
right,
they kind of go deep and fold things in on themselves. And that would have been very funny if 45 minutes till showtime, you know, some, you know, Joe and Barry are having conversation. So you're going to go 45 minutes till showtime. I better. And that would have been classic.
That would have been.
Unfortunately, for people that are thinking, 45 minutes, that's the length of this show. Nope. According to iTunes, 42 minutes, 33 seconds. We know Firestorm is coming. We've seen Firestorm.
We've seen more than one Firestorm.
Oh, yeah. This week we actually see two Firestorms. Yep. So Caitlin is trying to figure out what the heck Firestorm is, because when her boyfriend, Ronnie Raymond, approached her in the last episode, he said Firestorm and then flew off. So she's been looking up Firestorm. Apparently, there's a movie called Firestorm.
Yes, with Howie Long.
Is that no? I don't think that was the movie she saw pop up on the screen. I think it was a DC Comics movie, kind of like they've had Hawk and Cinnamon and Blue Devil and the story of Elastic Girl. Yeah, I think this was one of those movies. But then they go in and they find out the Firestorm's an acronym, and Barry gets to use some speed reading 800 pages very quickly.
Firestorm is an acronym for Flaming Idiot. Really excellently something the other Raza. What?
You just walked into that. That's all right.
You're meanie.
But one of the co-authors of this paper, in addition to R.L. Stein, Martin Stein,
It's not an episode of Goosebumps.
This episode features an appearance by a spooky puppet.
Ooh. Oh, it's the Crimson Clown.
One of the co-authors of this paper is one Jason Rush. Who is Jason Rush, Matthew?
Jason Rush actually is the character who became the second Firestorm in around 2000, I would say three.
Four.
2003, yeah. 2000, yeah, right before Infinite Crisis. Mm-hmm. And when they relaunched Firestorm after Ronnie Raymond Firestorm was murdered in Identity Crisis.
Yay.
He became the new Firestorm with the cool headgear.
Yes.
And the all of the like scroll work in and around his face.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, his girlfriend was horribly murdered in Blackest Night.
Yes, she
and
was.
And after that, he and a resurrected Ronnie actually, I don't know if that was New 52 or pre-New 52, but I know at least post-New 52, they could work together and use the Firestorm Matrix to become one Firestorm or two separate Firestorms.
Interesting. At one point, poor Jason was captured by the Secret Society of Supervillains and turned into a power source for their evil villain lair. Not in this episode, though. Caitlin goes and meets with Jason, and as soon as she mentions Firestorm, he starts freaking out because R.L. Stein was doing something that he wasn't supposed to.
No.
He was telling horrible, scary stories to children.
Not R.L. Stein,
and the
Frank
government,
Stein.
And the government came in and took away all of his research, and no one ever heard from R.L. Stein again until this summer when the Goosebumps movie arrives in theaters. I think it's this summer. There's a Goosebumps movie on the way. That's
awesome.
How I know this stuff. But here's the thing. We know that, oh, dang it, now I forgot his name. Who's the actor? Victor Garber?
Victor Garber.
Is playing Martin Stein. We get to see his picture this week, which is nice.
Yeah.
We've seen Ronnie before. We knew that the whole Ronnie thing was a reference to Firestorm. We know that Firestorm was coming. We know that Victor Garber is playing Martin Stein. We haven't seen him in the show yet, which may be the episode 2 weeks from now, or maybe he shows up at the end of the season, who knows, but we know that those two are going to appear now. Was Jason, did he mention the organization that came in? He just said the government, right?
I don't think he said specifically, you know, he didn't say like Spiral or Checkmate or anything like that.
Who was the one from Plastique? Who was the, what was that group? That was the army guy.
Yeah, that was General Eiling.
Yeah, John Eiling. Yeah,
I can't remember the name of his group right off the top of my head.
But I wonder if that was his group.
Oh, I'm sure.
That would be interesting.
Tie it all back together.
So I'm going to bet we're going to see Jason Rush at least one more time in this series.
Maybe two more times.
Maybe four
Maybe
more times.
Maybe half the time he'll be a floating head.
No. Martin will be the floating head in this.
You think?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that somehow Victor is going to end up merging with Ronnie to control the Firestorm Matrix. And that's going to be the whole thing.
A three-man Firestorm Matrix.
No, I think Jason is going to end up being kind of a liaison between the Firestorm Matrix and Star Labs.
Interesting.
And he's going to pop up a couple of times.
Then Firestorm will get his own series, Friday nights on the CW.
Well, you know, we're going to get a test of Arrow here in a few weeks where Oliver Queen's not even in the episode. And it's going to be all the sidekicks and side character heroes. And we're going to see how well that works. Because we know that we could very easily see an Atom show come out of this, a Black Canary show come out of this. We could get a whole Justice League Detroit out of this if we play our cards right, Matthew.
Has the Atom atomized yet?
Yeah, I think he's been on the show. I haven't watched season 3 yet, but I know in the comic books that he is a character now in the Flash season 2.5 or Flash season 0, whatever it is.
If they're going to do a JL Detroit, they need to give Cisco his powers and turn him into Vi.
I keep waiting for him to get his powers, and then I was kind of thinking that. So what happens in the story? So Flash comes in, breaks up the crime, Heat Wave, and Captain Cold, or just Cold here.
Well, Cisco calls him Captain Cold. He says in the announcement, "My name is Cold."
Oh man, wasn't that a great way? So they what they end up doing is they kidnapped Caitlin after she goes and meets with Jason. And they do the classic villain thing where they interrupt all broadcast television.
Right.
We bring, hello, Batman. Happy
Batman.
Christmas, Gotham City. But they cut in and say,
where was the Flash? He's at home washing his tights.
It's just such a classic villain move. I just loved it. I was like, wow, that was so well done. And so then there's this big showdown that's coming up. At one point, they tied up Caitlin to a chair, and Heatwave was doing his crazy pyromaniac stuff. I half expected him to pull the trigger and her to, and that would trigger her
Killer Frost powers.
I'm just guessing that Caitlin has powers and Cisco has powers, but they are keeping those things super contained.
Or they don't even know they have power.
Maybe not.
Now here's my theory. Next week, we're going to see Hartley Rathaway as the Pied Piper.
Right.
What if Pied Piper's sound-related powers trigger Cisco's vibe powers?
Yeah. Well, or he creates some kind of... Remember, what was the Batman Beyond character that had the vibration things in his hands?
I didn't watch enough Batman Beyond.
What? Aw. I'm gonna bet that if Cisco creates something, it's gonna be something physical for his vibe powers. He'll create some amplifiers in his hands or something.
Oh, that would be cool. And then he's gotta wear like huge breakdancing pants
to contain all the
vibrations to keep him from getting hurt.
Let me look this up. Batman Beyond sound villain. Ooh, there's actually a Google autofill. Shriek is the villain's name in Batman Beyond. And if you go and look up Shriek, that could easily be a vibe costume. Shriek. That could be a Cisco costume right there.
They call him Shrieky, Shrieky, faster than lightning.
Joe moved pretty quick to keep that bomb from blowing up on her.
Didn't he, though? It kind of makes you wonder if Joe's not another Reverse Flash.
I don't think so.
Everybody else gets to be the Reverse Flash. Why doesn't Joe?
What about the location that the rogues tell them to meet them at?
Was it the corner of Porter and Main?
Yes. Porter being a reference to Howard Porter, comic book artist, who worked with The Flash with Jeff Johns in 2004, had a horrible hand injury shortly after and had to leave art and become a bus driver as he did rehab.
Wow.
Yeah. He's currently working on the Justice League 3000 series.
Yeah.
And he was at Nerdtacular 2014 with us, and I was on a panel with him on the comic panel. And there, if you go over to Alpha Geek Radio and do a search for Nerdtacular 2014 comic panel, you can listen to that panel there. It's got me, Scott Johnson, Joel Duggan, I forget who else. Adriana Ferguson and Brian Dunaway are all on that panel. Scott Johnson as well. So go listen to that. It's a really good one. But yes, they seem to throw in, and I think that seems to be another classic comic book trope, throwing in street addresses as a nod to creators.
Oh yeah, that's a huge deal. They did that in the 90s Flash series. Mm-hmm. If you actually listen carefully in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie,
yeah,
somebody says you need to go to the East Warehouse on Lairdman Island.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah. I think the Rogues, while they're calling Barry out, they call him the Scarlet Speedster.
They do. Wentworth Miller calls him the Scarlet Speedster.
That was kind of neat.
That was nice. Especially since his costume is really more of a Merlot
Crimson.
Kind of a blood red.
Yeah. The powers, cold turns things absolute cold, heat turns things absolute heat.
Is there such a thing as absolute
heat? They didn't even explain that. That was really crappy writing this week. Heat is maximum heat. You mean a supernova? They didn't say that. They just said maximum heat.
Heat sounds like a movie that you can see on Cinemax.
It's
on
got
Friday
Arnold Schwarzenegger
night.
And Jim Belushi in it.
I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking maybe James Dean and a girl named Roxy with three X's.
I would think Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Belushi.
Maximum heat.
But they do theorize over at Star Labs that if you can cross the streams, maybe the two weapons will cancel one another out.
And then the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man will explode.
And they do make a nice Ghostbusters reference. With Cisco saying, oh, yeah, that TV show or that movie was amazingly scientifically accurate. And then the best bit was when Wells said, yes, it was also quite funny.
That was nice. I also liked it when Cisco was like, we'll call him Heatwave. Stop that.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel bad because that's the best part of the show is.
Oh, yeah. When Cisco he gets his names. Yeah. I mean, and that's. I mean, how else are you going to give these bad guys their names?
Just own up to it. Just accept the fact that people are going to have
here's
these
the thing.
Names.
No, I know that, but you can't name yourself. You can't go out and say, I shall now be known as The Flash. You have to have somebody else give you that name.
Or else you sound like a real man chooses his own nickname.
Or you sound like a real egocentric douche if you do that.
Well, I'm sorry. I've chosen my own nickname, and from now on, I am Galactic President Superstar McAwesomeville.
Well, that's what I said. Super Ego Douche.
Super Ego Douche, actually, is my Devo cover band.
When a problem comes along,
you must douche it.
The guys end up getting captured. Star Labs and the police make nice with one another. Mm-hmm. And Barry moves in with Papa Joe.
And I think Eddie's antipathy for the Flash may have diminished somewhat.
Oh, yeah. He knows now that the Flash is there to help save the world.
Flash is on the up and up.
Yep.
Everybody in the world knows, or at least the people who are aware, the Flash has been made public and people know he's called the Flash.
And that means all sorts of crazy are going to come heading their way to Central City.
That's right. Catwoman and
Penguin is going to resurface from the sewers after being dropped down there as an ugly child.
Exactly. Oh, and I almost forgot.
What's that?
When Wentworth Miller and T-Boz are headed off to prison.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And someone breaks them out, and Captain Cold is like, hey, sis.
Hey, sis. Sister Snart, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. Lisa Snart, used to be a figure skater.
She did.
She used to be able to spin really cool.
And now,
she fell in
she's
love.
A magical figure skater.
She fell in love with Roscoe Dillon, who we also know as
The Top.
Yeah, she's a spinning figure skater, and she falls in love with a guy named The Top.
And she also has figure skates that use the cold powers of her brother to allow her to fly through the air on sheets of ice.
Interesting. But that, I don't think, is her power in this show.
You don't think so?
No, because how does she stop? All we see whenever she's stopping the prison transfer van is big flashes of red light.
We see a blade of some sort. I think.
Did we see a blade? I thought it was a heat gun.
It could be a heat
because,
gun. You know what it could be?
Because Cold does tell Heatwave to memorize and learn everything about his gun so that they can repair it.
Right. Could be. Or, you know what it could be?
What?
A mirror gun to create the new Mirror Master.
No, that would be interesting.
That he gave to his sister just for safekeeping.
That would be very interesting. Now, Lisa Snart becomes the villain Golden Glider after the Top is killed fighting the Flash.
Yes.
And she wants to vow revenge against him. She first appeared
really
in Flash 250 in 1977.
Yeah. I'm really happy that they brought her in because most people had forgotten her. And if it weren't for her, I wouldn't have been able to finish my 10 superhumans who skate.
Yeah. I was sitting there after the episode. I was like, Sister Snart, did he have a sister? I don't remember him having a sister.
Yes,
and then
she
I had to go
late
and,
in the mythos.
I had to go and look up Sister Snart. That's my search term that I used.
Sister Snart.
Sister Snart.
Oh, the time has come
to go and get a mirror gun.
It's true. It's true.
And there's some crazy guy. There's Doc Ock with a gun firing it off with a little guy throwing firecrackers
throwing
around the room.
M80s around.
Yeah, I think.
And for some reason, Marky Mark is getting ready to rob them all.
Yeah. So are we missing anything in this week's installment of The Flash? Good episode. I liked it. I thought the villain combo was great.
It was a strong one, and I like the fact that they came across as a great pairing, both as the actors and the characters.
Yeah.
I felt maybe like the whole cross the streams thing was kind of a let's wrap this up in an hour, but I can deal with that. There was another reference to Tina McGee and her Mercury Labs.
Yes, Mercury Labs was mentioned again.
Yep.
That's where Jason Rush is working.
Rush.
Now. Yeah.
Rush.
Oh, different Rush.
Yeah, it's the spirit of radio.
Yeah, there you go.
Invisible air. We sing a lot in this show, don't we?
Why we shouldn't.
Hey. It's the
I'm
Flash.
Trying to think if there was anything else. Of course, the coffee shop, yes. Jitters, has become a staple in that. CC Jitters.
Jitters, yeah. Were those Big Belly Burgers?
Big Belly Burgers. Yes, those are Big Belly Burgers. And unfortunately, when I play this back on iTunes, I can't do a screen capture because I'd love to do the screen captures because I wanted to zoom in because it's very apparent in that pile of burger wrappers that the info, the health info, the calorie diet stuff is all right there front and center. I wanted to blow it up and find out how many calories were in a big belly burger.
Big belly burgers are belly big. Hey.
Yeah. And so I think, I thought it was a very solid episode. I really dug it. It wasn't jumping up and down excitement like it was with the Man in the Yellow Suit, but I thought the Revenge of the Rogues was very solid.
It was a nice comeback from a long holiday break episode.
It was. Yes, it was, definitely. I can't wait till next week when we see Pied Piper show up. I'm going to be interested if they play the character as homosexual. I'm going to be interested to see if he, at some point, if he's a recurring character, if he turns good, or if he becomes friends and then turns good. What was the order with? We'll talk Pied Piper next time. But what was the order? Did he go villain, friend, good?
He went and villain, tweener, friend, tweener, then full-on superhero, and then killed in Infinite Crisis or Countdown to Infinite Crisis, one of the two.
Wasn't he, who was he tagged onto? Trickster?
Trickster, yeah. He was, and it was James Jesse, the original Trickster.
Yeah.
And not Axel, if I'm not mistaken.
Axel Trickster?
Yeah. Axel, the second Trickster, he's a real Axel.
All right, everybody, that wraps it up for this look at The Flash, and our flashback is now over.